Get a kick when you click at chapelboro.com. Chapelboro.com, more of what you live here for. And now, welcome to The Art of Potential with your host, Kristen Heemstra, on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemstra, and you are listening to The Art of Potential show, and we have such a treat for you. We are talking with Cynthia Shapiro, and she is a best-selling author. She has two books out, What Does Someone Have to Do to Get a Job Around Here, and a new one called Corporate Confidential. Welcome, Cynthia.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
So one of the things that I really like about Cynthia is she has been, or she hired a lot of people. And one of the things is folks who listen to the show know, getting jobs, especially in this market, is very difficult. And one of the perspectives we often miss is from that of someone who has done the hiring. So I would like to welcome you, Cynthia, and we are so excited to hear all the advice you have for us.
Thank you. I'm excited to give it. People need some good advice right now. Everybody's kind of worried, and I'm happy to be here.
Well, great. Okay, so tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, like you said, I started out on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, you know, if I talk about this a little bit in Corporate Confidential and in What Does Somebody Have to Do to Get a Job Around Here, it's really interesting how HR has evolved, human resources.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of started out as almost like an employee concierge, and the people who got into it because they wanted to help people.
Yep.
And the idea behind it used to be that you keep the employees really happy, you take care of their benefits, you do, you know, barbecues, and you take care of problems as they arise to take it off the desks of the managers. And the idea was happy employees, more productive, more profitable company. But within the last really 15 years, and especially the last 10 years, HR has changed into a protection mechanism for the company. But their PR hasn't changed, so they still represent themselves as employee concierge. But if you come to them and you tell them something or involve them in something that they have been told to act on by upper management, they will all of a sudden not be on your side. And it causes huge problems for employees, and I was right in the middle of it, and it became a terrible place to be. And I had to switch sides. I absolutely had to. I was compelled to be the one to sort of create the bridge between what employees need to know and what companies can't tell them.
So it sounds like you have almost a value clash in that regard, because to your point, it did, like, I mean, the name human resources implies that you really see the humans working as being great resources for the company.
Yeah, yeah, and it's funny because, yeah, it even changed, even the name changed from personnel to human resources, almost like disposable, you know, and that's kind of how a lot of employees are being treated. And if you're in human resources, unless you're working for a really extraordinary company, you are forced to be both angel and henchman. It's a very uncomfortable place to be, and it's the employees who really get the brunt of it. They're the ones who are getting hurt.
Okay, so let's talk about this. What are some things? Well, let's start from the beginning, actually, and work our way through this. Let's start with the job seeker. The job seeker who is coming in and really wants to work for Company X. And let's say Company X is a big company, well-known in the local area, hires, we'll say they have 1,000 people working for them. So they're big enough to do that, and they're taking their resumes by computer, like you can send it in. How does a person get into that company?
Well, you have to understand how the whole system works from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And hiring managers really keep these things secret. And that's really why I wrote the book, because I wanted to expose these secrets. If you can see it from the inside, you know exactly what to do to be the top candidate, and you know what to avoid. So the first thing you have to understand is that if for a large company, a well-known brand name company, they may put an ad in the paper and they may get over 1,000 resumes.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to make sure you can stand out in that stack.
Okay.
And you have to make sure you get through the computer scanners. The computer scanners are going to look for keywords, and they are going to scan you out if they don't see exactly the right thing.
And those keywords would be found in the job description?
They are. It's one of my favorite secrets is that a hiring manager will take their job description and hand it right over to the IT people. And the IT people will highlight the keywords and put that in the computer scanner. So you want to plagiarize the dickens out of that job posting, word for word, as close as you can get to it. Now, that's hard to do on a resume, so I like doing it in the cover letter. A computer does not know the difference between a cover letter and a resume.
Okay.
So plagiarize that job posting, word for word. Put it all in your cover letter featuring the things that you have and ignoring the things that you don't, that aren't a match, that they're asking for. And that'll get you through. That'll get you to the top of the stack.
Well, that's great to know, because I was not aware that they actually scanned cover letters. I thought they just scanned the resumes.
Well, the computer doesn't know the difference.
Right.
So it's going to scan everything, and the cover letter usually comes through first, so they'll grab it. And then people always worry, well, what if they're going through them, you know, by hand, and they notice that it's word, you know, most of it's word for word out of the job posting. You know what? They are not going to have the job posting right next to them when they do this. And when they see their own words coming back at them, it will just psychologically make you look like a perfect match.
It does. And there's something about the psychology of words and the way each person individually understands words, actually.
Well, yeah, and it basically says they literally speak our language.
Yep.
It's going to be a good fit.
Okay, so now the person has plagiarized the dickens out of the, the resume or out of the job description.
Yes.
So now they get moved. Then what happens?
Well, you have to understand, going through the whole process, that you are in a process of elimination from the very beginning.
Okay.
Most people imagine that they're in some sort of process of inclusion. That's not how it works. When they're going through the stack of resumes, the average time they spend, I don't want to scare anybody, but the average time they spend doing that first scan on your resume is 3 seconds. That's it. And if you land in the no pile, you're not coming back. So they cull all those resumes down, they get to a much smaller pile, and now they're going through looking for what they feel is a match on paper. And then they're going to call it, and what they're going to do next, they're going to take their top three that look like a match on paper and that look like they have confident cover letters, and they're going to do a phone screening. That phone call doesn't mean they're interested in you. It means they're passing you through another level of elimination.
Okay.
They're going to try to call you and catch you off guard to see if there are screaming kids in the background, or to see if you remember who you sent your resume to. And they're gonna employ every trick they have to try to eliminate you in that phone screening.
So they're not even setting up a pre-interview. They're setting up just gonna catch it when I can catch it kind of a thing.
A lot of hiring managers do it as a test.
Wow.
They'll try to catch you during dinner time because it's a great window into your life.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to ask if you have kids, but if they call at dinner time, they might be able to hear if you have kids or a chaotic home life or, you know, all kinds of things.
And all of this to the first point, you've got 1,000 resumes for one job, so you've got to be cutting people off left and right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's really two processes. It's difficult to make yourself look really good in a two-dimensional flat piece of paper resume.
Right.
It you really have to look at yourself like a product. Think of yourself as a product, and this resume is your brochure. What are your differentiating points? What do they need to know most about you? Does your resume set you up for where you want to go, or is it a boring biography of where you've been? Really look at this as marketing. Same with the cover letter. Don't do a big, boring business letter. It's a cover ad. It's a short, punchy, confident cover ad tailored to your target market to get them excited to read the resume. And then the resume is designed to get them excited to pick up the phone and call you. And once that happens, you switch into a totally different skill set, which is your in-person sales skills. But it's all sales.
It's okay. So your in-person sales skills seems to me like those would be more verbal.
That's when you sell them on the phone screening, and that's when you do your in-person sit-down handshake interview. And those are two totally different skill sets. Making yourself look good on paper and selling yourself in person are two totally different activities. And usually people are really good at one and not good at the other.
you really have to develop yourself.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break here. But when we come back, I want to know how to then transition from the phone into the handshake interview, because that sounds like an additional set of skills you need to have.
It is.
Okay, hold on. You are listening to Kristen Heemstra. I am talking with Cynthia Shapiro, and we are talking about what happens behind the scenes of the hiring process, and we will be right back.
Visit chapelboro.com for more of What You Live Here For. And now, back to The Art of Potential with Kristen Heemstra on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra, and I am talking with Cynthia Shapiro. She is the best-selling author of What Does Somebody Have to Do to Get a Job Around Here? And she has a new book out, Corporate Confidential. And she is sharing with us what goes on behind the scenes of the hiring process, which is, this is just gold. I mean, absolute gold. So we were just talking about the skill set needed to shake hands, and now we're moving into the actual interview.
Yeah. The interview, I devoted a large part of the book to the interview process because companies have gotten really sneaky about it. And, you know, dealing with an unskilled interviewer who just wants to talk about the weather and walk mm-hmm. through your resume is just as dangerous as the shark interviewer who's you know, lobbing behavioral interview questions at you and trying mm-hmm. to trick you. You have to be prepared for all different kinds. In fact, I outline 8 different types of interviews and how to be completely prepared for each one, why they're employing the tactic, what you need to do to take control of the situation. My mission is really all about empowerment. So yeah. even though some of these things that are going on in the job search process and in corporate America are scary, it doesn't have to be scary if you know how to spot it and how to fix it. And everything is fixable. So you go into the interview, and you first have to determine what kind of interview you're in so you know which is going to be the right tactic for you. And then, again, it's all about sales. You want to emphasize all the things that you do have to offer. You want to sell them on, you know, close them on who you are and why you're the right match. And you want to answer in stories rather than lists, because stories, you know, success stories will stick in people's minds much longer than a list will.
Mm-hmm.
And you really kind of break it down into connecting with the interviewer. That's key, because most people go in their own little bubble.
Yeah.
and whoever connects with the interviewer gets the job. One of my favorite secrets in the book is the halo effect. We as human beings tend to trust one kind of person more than any other, and those are the people we perceive to be most like us. And whoever gets that halo effect is the one who gets the job, even if they don't have the best skills and talent, because the name of the game is making the hiring manager feel comfortable about recommending you. So whoever is, you know, the safest bet for hire is always the one who gets the job, even if they're not the best qualified.
Mm-hmm.
Because the hiring manager's job is on the line for every single person they recommend. So if you go in your own bubble and you fail to connect with that interviewer, you're done. There's no way you're going to get that job, because they're not going to feel comfortable recommending you for the next step.
Okay, so here I have a question for you. When you talk about a hiring manager, you're talking about a different person than the actual person that the individual will be working for, or are you talking about the same one?
You know, I'm glad you asked that. I use the term hiring manager because it's different in every company.
Mm-hmm.
Some companies will have an internal HR person who does all their first screening hiring.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes in smaller companies, the person who would be your boss is doing the hiring.
Yeah, yeah.
And you really never know. If it's HR, it's probably going to escalate to someone else, but you never know who it's going to be. It's really whoever is in charge of the hiring for that job, and they might be trained, or they might not be trained.
Absolutely. And depending, I'd also just like to say, depending on who you were recommended by, and we can talk about recommendations mm-hmm. in a minute, will also produce a halo effect or not.
Well, absolutely. A recommendation is golden. If you can get an internal recommendation, that automatically makes you the safest bet for hire. If that person is well thought of in the company,
mm-hmm.
You know, like I said before, a hiring manager's job is on the line with every person they recommend for hire.
Yeah.
If I recommend you for hire and you don't work out, I could lose my job.
Mm-hmm.
It's expensive to hire people, and it's a legal nightmare to get rid of them.
Yes.
So I'm not protecting the company if I've recommended someone who's not the safest bet. And a lot of it is just perception. You know, can I recommend someone who I know has been terminated? No. Can I recommend someone who submitted their resume on pink paper? No. even if they are the most qualified. Because I have to be able to justify my decision to the CEO at the end of the day.
It's a lot of pressure for the hiring manager then, too, to come up with the person that they think is going to be the best fit.
It is, and that's why they over-scrutinize everything. Mm-hmm. And that's why they read into everything, and that's why they come in with lots of fears, and that's why they employ tricks. Tricks that a lot of people would say are dirty tricks, but they do things like figure out how to find out information that would be illegal to ask about, or lob trick questions at you, or even put you in an uncomfortable situation to see how you behave.
Okay, so let's talk about this. One of them sounds like the stress interview. With the, but let's hear about some of those tricks, because I was not aware of the let me call home at the evening and find out if I hear a screaming baby in the background trick.
There's lots of tricks. There's two that we could highlight here that are particularly nasty. One is, and this has become more and more common, because we're socialized to respond in kind. People know that they can get illegal information out of you if they share first.
Okay.
So, you know, a hiring manager will come in and sit down and say, oh, sorry, my back's been killing me. I think I might have to have surgery. And they just leave it there. And they're expecting you to respond in kind, like, oh, yeah, I hurt my knee and I've got this problem and that problem. You know, like you're having a conversation like the interview hasn't even started yet.
Oh, wow.
But it's illegal to ask about medical information for a reason. And a lot of companies will do this because right now HR managers are bristling all over listening to this. The reason they do this is because healthcare costs is one of the number one large and growing costs for a company. So if they bring in someone who's not in perfect health, you're going to get in trouble. Or they'll come in and they'll say, oh, I'm sorry I'm late. I had to take my daughter to soccer practice. You know, aren't kids great? And they'll just let it lie there because they know we're socialized to say, oh, yeah, I've got two kids and da-da-da-da-da. And you've just volunteered information that you shouldn't volunteer. They shouldn't even know that you have kids.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't know anything about your medical history. All that stuff is personal and private for a reason.
And it's not relevant to the job. Can you just explain, just quickly, what constitutes a legal and an illegal question?
Well, it's based on the protections. So a company's not allowed to discriminate based on your race, creed, sexual orientation, whether or not you have children. The list kind of goes on and on. And medical, they're not allowed to discriminate against any of these things. Mm-hmm. But the reason they're not allowed to discriminate, the federal government says you're not allowed to discriminate, and age is in there too, is because that information is very valuable to a company. That information determines whether you can work long nights and weekends or travel a lot or if you're going to make their medical expenses go up. So companies have gotten really sneaky, especially in this economy, knowing that they can't handle any added expenses or they can't do without one single person. They've gotten really sneaky at finding out that information without coming right out and asking it. So they trick you into volunteering it. Now, not all companies do this, and if you find yourself in that kind of a trick, I would say that doesn't bode well for working for
right.
that company. That itself is good information to have.
No, it is, and to your point, I've often told people you can get a lot just by the questions they ask in an interview. For example, they say, how do you handle conflict? You know there's a lot of conflict that's going on behind the doors.
Be really careful about what they're asking you. You are screening them, although you have to do it secretly.
Right.
You know, pay attention, because if they say this is a difficult place to work, or if they say they don't have any money, this is them at their best.
Right.
This is them trying to sell you on taking the job. If they tell you something like that, believe them.
Right.
It's true.
They're not lying.
Right. And it's the same kind of thing for the type of interview style they choose, like the stress interview that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
This is the hardest for people.
Yeah.
Basically, you go into the interview, and the hiring manager isn't paying any attention to you. They're answering phone calls. They're getting up off their desk. They're texting. Or maybe they put you in a situation that stresses you out. Maybe they're belittling you or being mean to you in the interview. These, a lot of times, it could just be a really bad interviewer, but most of the time it's a trick to see how you handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because they've got a CEO who's a screamer, or they've got a really nasty client that nobody wants to work with, or this is just their company culture, and they need to find people who can handle that kind of thing. So if you're not comfortable with the interview style they employ, you are not going to be comfortable working in that organization.
And just to piggyback on that, my college roommate interviewed with an airlines, and their whole thing was they would, you know, shuffle all the folks in who wanted to be airline stewards or stewardesses, and then they'd have them sit down and wait. And you know, and they did this numerous times. And yes, it was a stressful interview for a lot of people, but that was the reality of the job too. It was like, how do you handle this?
Well, yeah, same thing. Yeah. You know, I've heard that from a lot of people where they show up for the interview on time and they're supposed to wait for an hour and a half. If you storm out, you have failed the test.
Right.
It's a test. You have to understand that the test for an interview starts the minute you answer the phone, the minute you walk in through the front doors. When I was a hiring manager, I used to employ the receptionist.
Mm-hmm.
The receptionist was my spy. And I would say, you know, were they impatient? Were they rude to you? Were they? Did they refuse to fill out the full application? Did they do this or do that? The reason hiring managers over-scrutinize everything is because they don't know you.
Right.
So they read into everything.
All right, we're going to take another break here. And when we come back, I want to talk, continue our conversation about the different types of interview styles, because there are a lot that people do need to be aware of before they walk in the door. So this is Kristen Heemstra. I am talking with Cynthia Shapiro. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show on 1360 WCHL. We will be right back.
Visit chapelboro.com for more of what you live here for. And now, back to The Art of Potential with Kristen Heemstra on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back. You are listening to The Art of Potential show. This is Kristen Heemstra, and I am talking with Cynthia Shapiro, and we're talking about the different techniques employers use to interview, or the different types of interviews employers use to get to know the candidates. So we just talked about the stress interview, which is probably one of the rarer types of interview methods.
It's tough. It's really tough. You know, some people actually like that kind of, you know, that kind of adrenaline rush. So that would be the company for you. But for most of it, it's like, what was that?
Yes. Well, and I don't know if it's an old wives' tale, or I read somewhere about the Army using one where, I'm sure you've heard this, where they nailed a window shut and then asked the person to go and open the window. And, you know, depending on their reaction, that was, I don't know what it told them. I don't know why you would do that to somebody, but anyway.
Well, that's exactly why. They want to see how you handle stress. They want to see how you handle problem solving. They want to, you know, behavioral interview questions have been the latest thing. And they're really deadly because they require you to answer with a story.
Mm-hmm. They do.
But, you know, that became unsatisfying after a while because there's people out there like me teaching people how to handle those. And so now they've decided to put people into a behavioral situation.
Ooh.
And that's what you're talking about with the window nailed shut, or the interviewer who is you know, really good putting you under the stress, or they, you know, they march you. I had a client who called me, and they marched him from the interview chair into a meeting with clients and said, sell them on this product. They're looking to see how you handle it, and they're putting you actually in the situation.
Well, that takes a lot of gumption just to put, you know, an interviewee on a sales call right away.
That's what I would call a cowboy company. And some people love cowboy companies. They can be really fun, but you have to know. One of the reasons why you screen the company secretly while you're in the interview is because you need to make sure it's a good personality match for you. Companies are living, breathing entities, and they have personalities just like you do.
Yep.
And if you get a personality match, you're going to be very happy there, and how you naturally work will elevate you. If you get a mismatch, no matter how hard you work, they will never value you and you will never be happy.
And that is very important. And I know a lot of people, particularly with the economy like it is right now, are kind of sitting and waiting. I mean, I'm very aware that's going on. And it's interesting to talk about people who are who talk to people who are employed right now, because so many of them are unhappy in their current situations.
They are, and part of the reason is because they feel they don't have any options. I mean, as free-thinking Americans, we always like lots of options.
Right.
If you feel trapped, that psychologically is gonna hurt you, but also because it's not just your job anymore. You might be doing the job of 3, 4, 5 people.
Yes.
So the people who are working are really stressed out. Mm-hmm. And actually, that speaks to Corporate Confidential. The second book is all about how to empower yourself in your career, how to deal with those kinds of situations in an empowering way so that you can get what you want even when your company is doing without or putting additional stress on you or, you know, what have you. And so it can greatly... You know, because what we were talking about earlier, you really want to choose the right place for you. Maybe you can't. Maybe you just need a job. Maybe you land in a mismatch. It's fixable.
Right.
There are political tools that anyone can learn, skills mm-hmm. anyone can learn, that will help you manage the people around you, your boss, the politics of the organization, so that you can get what you need from that experience.
Absolutely. And to feel like you're in the driver's seat and in control of where you're going, I think is so important, even when the economy isn't doing great.
You know, it always shocks me how many people come to me every day and they feel like victims of mm-hmm. their job. They're victims of a bad boss, of a bad economy, of a bad, job search, of bad corporate politics. And it doesn't have to be that way. Mm-hmm. If you understand how it works from the inside and you learn the tools, you can be empowered and you can get anything you want from your job search or from your career.
I want to talk about that more. What I want to get back to real quick, though, is the different types of interviews. Because I do think when you understand those different types of interview strategies that are coming your way, it does then put you in more control of the outcome of the interview.
Yes.
Okay, so... A panel interview. Tell me about that.
Oh, yeah. The panel interview is kind of deadly. You walk into what you think is an interview, and it looks like a board meeting.
Right.
All that's missing is the bright light shining in your eyes.
Right.
And that really scares people. But what you have to ask yourself, what are they looking for? Why are they doing this? Well, panel interviews have become more prevalent because it's time effective, right? You get everybody all together in one meeting, and then you all screen the person together. So it's a lot easier.
And you get the stakeholders tend to be on the panel. So.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, all the main decision makers are there. So you can't connect with any one interviewer. You can't really treat it like a regular interview. But they're also looking to see your presentation skills.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you do it. You treat it like a presentation. You treat it like you're doing a presentation to a group of clients.
And just to piggyback on that, often with the panel interview, they often have a script. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
What you mean just what they want to get out of it?
Yeah, they often, in the panel interviews I've been a part of, everyone has one question.
Oh, right. Yeah. They basically whatever management says is we're gonna panel interview this person, and you each get one question, and then they look over the questions to make sure nobody overlaps.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really the question that's most important to that person. That person came up with that question, and that's their main concern. So when you're getting that one question from each individual, no one else in the room exists. You connect with that person asking the question, and you answer it for them.
And also, the one other thing I'd like to add to that is as you have your connection and keep that connection and you go through the rest of the panel, one of the downsides, I think, of a panel interview is that often it's so scripted they can't come back and ask for additional information.
That's right. They're not going to be able to. But you can still... There are definite limitations to the panel interview. Mm-hmm. But if they're asking individual questions, that's your opportunity to connect with them. And then you've got your thank you letter. And a thank you letter you want to send to every single person that you met with, so every single person in the panel. And the questions they ask you will secretly tell you what's most important to them. You want to jot it down. As each person asks a question, you know, this one is worried about production. This one's worried about profitability. This one's worried about whether or not I'm going to make them look bad or support them and be loyal to them. And then when you send in the thank you note, that's the point you want to hit. And that's really the way to make a panel interview into a home run.
Absolutely. That is great advice. And then what are some of the other types that you've seen?
Well, another really common one is the tag team interview. You go in to interview maybe with someone in human resources, and then they say, hey, hang on a minute, let's see if the VP is available. Oh, and let's see if this person, your colleague is available. And all of a sudden you've met six people, and it's turned into a four-hour interview spree. You never know when one's going to happen. Sometimes they'll tell you it's coming, and sometimes they won't. It's a good sign. It means you're doing well. They're escalating you up the line.
You haven't been ruled out by the first person that's met you.
Well, yeah. If the interview's over in 20 minutes, it could be the abrupt interview, which is another style we'll talk about in a minute, which is a test. Or it could be that's it. You're not going any further. You need to get some interview coaching. As they move you along the line, what you want to do is adapt to each person you're going to be interviewing with. So you want to ask yourself, what's most important to this person? Well, human resources is trying to screen you out. They're the eliminators.
Mm-hmm.
And then, the VP is going to want to know that you're in alignment with the company's core values, that you're going to be a good fit with the organization, more of a big picture focus. If you're interviewing with a colleague, that person's going to make sure that you're not a threat and that you're going to support them and maybe come in foundationally with them and really, make them look good. If you're interviewing with the person who would be your boss, you want to make sure they know you're going to be easy to work with, you're going to do things the way they want them done, you're going to come in a supportive role. So you have to adapt on the fly to each of these people and know your audience. Ask yourself, what's going to be most important to them? What are going to be their fears? And what can I address? And then that will allow you to become the safest bet for hire with each of these people. And it's also why I recommend you always bring a snack, because you don't know when an interview is going to turn into a four-hour marathon and you may not get lunch.
That's great advice.
When you come in for an interview, always have water and a power bar, because you don't know.
That is great advice. And just kind of listening to you talk, Cynthia, what I hear a lot coming from you is know their fears and be safe. So
yes. It's
kind of where we started in the whole be the safest person for them to hire. And to be the safest, you really need to address their fear. I think that's a really, a very good approach.
When I do interview coaching, I tell people that people who are in the process of hiring, they don't listen with their ears. They listen with their fears.
So you
want to stop and ask yourself, why are they asking this question? What are they afraid of?
Mm-hmm. Which is assuming, of course, they wrote the question and HR didn't.
That's true, but you'll know. You can tell.
Oh, you definitely can. Yeah.
You can read people at all. You can tell. And if you know they're doing an HR script, wait till the end and say, what are you really looking for in this position? How do you see this position supporting you? What are the things you would want to see get done in the first 90 days so that you connect with them and address what's important to them?
That is great advice, and it does make it a whole different level of a much more personalized interview when you end it that way. We're going to take a quick break right now, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Corporate Confidential, your latest book, and talk about how to empower yourself as you're transitioning perhaps from one position to another or making a career transition. So we'll be right back. You are listening to Kristen Heemstra, and this is the Art of Potential Show.
Visit chapelboro.com for more of what you live here for. And now, back to the Art of Potential with Kristen Heemstra on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra, and I am talking with Cynthia Shapiro. She is the best-selling author of two books, What Do I Have to Do to Get Hired Around Here and Corporate Confidential, What Does Somebody Have to Do to Get a Job Around Here and Corporate Confidential. So, Cynthia, here's my question to you. How does a person get in control? You know what? I'm going to start this whole segment over again.
Okay. Oh, the beauty of taping.
Yes, I know. I love that. Okay. There we go. Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra, and I am talking with Cynthia Shapiro. Cynthia is the best-selling author of What Does Somebody Have to Do to Get a Job Around Here, as well as Corporate Confidential. And just as we wrap up this last segment, I am curious to know from you, Cynthia, how does a person empower themselves in the marketplace right now?
You know, we were talking over the break that, you know, this what we've been talking about here today is really just the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
And there are different things for different people. Everybody's dealing with something different. Everybody's dealing with a bad boss or being overwhelmed or doing the job of five people, or they're stuck in corporate politics, or, you know, there's a million different things. And Corporate Confidential has 50 secrets for a reason. And so that you can, you know, tailor it to what's going on in your life. But the main thing, and it's got real life stories too, which is probably my favorite part of the book, of people who have been there, done that, made the mistake, turned it around. So the idea is you really look at and kind of diagnose what is going on. You may be doing something you don't even realize that's costing you your career or making life more difficult than it has to be. The problem in corporations today is they cannot tell you what you're doing wrong.
Oh,
You'll see the fallout, but you won't ever be told. They can't tell you because they're afraid of being sued.
Oh, my goodness.
So you'll see that you're becoming invisible, or that your boss is turning away from you, or they don't value you, or they're giving you the bad clients, or they're, you know, you've got one foot on the layoff list. You'll see that stuff, but you won't know what it is that you're doing that's working against you. And that's really the crime, because if you do get laid off or you do get terminated, no one ever told you what was wrong, so you carry that behavior with you through every company.
So what would a sample behavior be that turns people off or doesn't bode well in the workplace?
There's lots of them. There are a lot of them. There's behavior that will squarely make your job better, that will make you happier, that will make you more visible, that will make your job more secure. And then there's behavior that will actively erode your job security and, you know, put you on the first to be removed list. There are secret layoff lists. All companies have lists of people they would like to remove as soon as they get a chance. You never want to be on that list. And the kinds of behaviors that trigger that are things like open negativity, complaining. Open negativity is deadly. It's one of the number one things that will put you on the outs with a company. Companies aren't doing really well right now. The last thing they need is a negative PR. Conversely, the behavior that will get you the most kudos and the most job security is open positivity. The cheerleaders, right? They tell everyone how much they love the company and they love this, they love that. You don't have to love everything, but, you know, be honest about it, but be an open supporter. The second one is the relationship with your boss. I can tell what level of job security you have by the relationship you have with your boss right now. Your boss is your gatekeeper. That person is in charge of everything you care about. And you don't have to like that person, but you do have to show them the proper respect, and you do have to learn how to support them and work with them effectively in a way that continues your job security.
So I have a question for you. If you have, around our area, I know we've had multiple levels of layoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have your boss, but your boss is also potentially on the chopping block, where do you fall out then? Is it, so you want to have, what I hear you saying is you want to have a good relationship with the bosses all the way up as far as you can see, even if your boss and your boss's boss don't get along so well.
Well, you don't really have to target the level above, because if you're really making your boss feel supported, if you've taken your boss's top three priorities and made them your own, if you make your boss look good and you're a positive force in the company, your boss is going to sing your praises for you.
Right.
For their boss. People who are, you know, really support their boss and become an MVP, everybody notices. It becomes very, very visible without you having to toot your own horn.
Mm-hmm.
So normally, the edict will come down from upper levels and they'll say you have to get rid of 10, 100, 200 people, and it's your boss who chooses. And it's way too tempting to choose the people that are a thorn in that boss's side.
Mm-hmm.
So the people who tend to go are the people the boss doesn't personally like. Is that fair? No, but it happens every day. If your boss is on the chopping block, normally the person making the recommendations will tell the boss that they're on the chopping block. And if it's going to go down to that next level, they're going to get the boss's recommendations before that boss leaves. So your boss is still the main gatekeeper, even if there are several levels of layoffs.
So to stay in good contact and have a good relationship with your boss is, it sounds like, the number one thing you can do to build job security.
It really is. Yeah. And like I said, you don't have to like that person. You don't have to go have barbecues at his house.
Right.
You do have to respect his ability to kill your career or save it. He really is the gatekeeper. Beyond that gate is everything you want. Raises, promotions, an easier time of it. Bosses do have favorites. You can struggle and be invisible, or you can be that favorite. And in the book, I actually outline easy steps that anyone can do and learn and implement right away that will make you the favorite.
Ooh, can we hear a few of these?
Sure. Well, the number one thing is to look at your boss's priorities. You want to find out what your boss's top three priorities are. Now, I guarantee you they are not going to be the things that you think are most important.
Why is that?
They're going to be a little weird. Well, because right. Bosses have pet peeves, right. And they have a whole different level of responsibility than you do.
Yeah, yeah. You know, they're looking at a different picture.
Managers can make it look easy, but it's hard. If you are managing correctly, you don't sleep well at night. You feel a huge sense of responsibility. 75% of everything you think about is how to improve your team, how to make things better, how to improve things for the company. They have a whole different level of stress than what you're privy to. And there's no management training anymore, so most of them are running scared, real scared.
Mm-hmm.
And they have nothing to fall back on. So find out what your boss's pet peeves are. Find out what your boss feels is most important to him or her. And make those your top three priorities. The biggest mistake people make, and I see it every day, is they come in and they work on what they feel is most important.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that's not what your boss thinks is most important, you are killing yourself to look completely invisible. If you work on the things that your boss feels is most important and you take away his or her pet peeves, now you're working less hours to make yourself more visible and more valued, and all of a sudden, you're on that path to favoritism.
I hear that. I'm just thinking in a work situation, though, a lot of times with the boss may not know what has to be done. Like, in terms of a work situation, the boss may say, these are my things. And then so, you know.
Well, that's even easier. If the boss doesn't know what has to be done, then their top priorities might be something really fairly easy. Now, you know there's lots of other work that needs to be done and has to be done, but ask yourself, is it really that important if my boss doesn't even know it exists? Most of us do things that aren't valued, and if it's not valued in the company, if it's not valued by your boss, you are wasting your time and making yourself look more invisible. You're doing more work for nothing.
Okay.
So if all you did were your boss's top three priorities, you have tremendous job security.
Yep.
I know that sounds crazy, but that's how it works. The boss will never get rid of someone that they feel is really supporting them.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Who would want somebody who, you know, is constantly conflicting with them, and who wouldn't want someone who's always supporting them?
And then another one, just to get a couple, levels deeper, another one goes back to the negativity and positivity. Bosses hate it when you openly stand against them and openly don't like them. You can't grumble about your boss around the water cooler and not have him or her find out about it. Bosses are smarter than that. I hate to break it to you. And if they know you're out there giving them negative PR, they're going to remove. They're not going to trust you.
Mm-hmm.
And this relationship is all about trust, and they're going to work against you.
Yeah.
They are going to favor the people who openly support them. So if someone comes to your desk and says, did you hear what your boss did the other day? You stop and you openly support him. Oh, I thought it was a great idea. I don't know what you're talking about. He's a brilliant manager.
Okay, I hear that. That makes sense. I'm just also thinking that would be a challenge for, some people who are working for...
No, it can be, and it doesn't have to be as brown-nosy as I just made it sound. Basically, people get into sort of negative cycles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you were to look at your boss realistically, really look at the things that you like about the person and you don't like about the person, and... Just to get yourself back in balance, because a lot of times we see the negative and then that's all we can see. But really listing out the things that you do like about your boss and focus on those positive aspects. And then, you know, when you're voicing positivity and support, only voice it on those things you truly believe. Yeah. Silence on the things that you don't agree with.
That's a great idea.
And your boss will actually get the message. Your boss, when a cheerleader goes silent, your boss is going to notice. Your boss will notice if they do something and you're totally silent and they did something else last week and you were jumping up and down.
Yeah, they're not getting the positive feedback.
It's really the best way to do it.
That is, I have to tell you, this has been amazing advice for people who are in the workplace right now and who are looking to get into the workplace. So good, in fact, that I think we may need to have you back for another show because we've run out of time. But thank you so much, Cynthia, for coming on to the Art of Potential show and sharing all of this information with us. So Corporate Confidential, that's on bookshelves now, is that correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
And I know we have it at Barnes & Noble because I was just there earlier. And we also have your other one, What Does Someone Have to Do to Get a Job Around Here?
I also have a link to it at CynthiaShapiro.com. So both books are linked to all the booksellers on there as well.
And I will have her information on my website, too, at theartofpotential.com. Thank you for listening to The Art of Potential Show on 1360 WCHL.